From NPR, it's Latino USA. How do you define humor? Is it self-deprecating, slapstick, maybe making fun of others? Well, what makes something funny is often hard to agree on because it can be a fine line between something that's hilarious and something that's offensive.
Latin people in the house, where are you, Latinos? All right. That's what I like about the East Coast. All the Latinos are generally legal, so that's nice.
Today we hear from three voices challenging stereotypes and satire. Comedian Russell Peters, cartoonist Lalo Alcaraz, and performance artist Wanda Raimundi Ortiz.
One thing which I disagree with is banning words. I have to use them as a writer. You know, I have to use the word illegal. I generally don't support, you know, anybody saying it, but there's just nuance to language.
Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. Latinos make up about 10% of the population of East Haven, Connecticut. Many are immigrants from Ecuador, and they've opened businesses on Main Street, just over the line from the larger and more diverse city of New Haven, Connecticut. Shopkeepers and their customers say that for years, they've been harassed, arrested, and beaten by members of the East Haven Police Department. That was documented in a scathing report issued in December by the U.S. Justice Department. Four officers were arrested. They were charged with violating the civil rights of Latinos and conspiring to cover up their actions. Melinda Tujus reports.
Sergeant John Miller and three officers who worked under him in East Haven were arrested by the FBI on January 24th after a year-long federal investigation that uncovered years of racial profiling of Latinos, police abuse of those arrested, and a cover-up by police to hide their actions. A grand jury charged the officers with conspiring to violate and violating the civil rights of members of the East Haven community. Announcing the arrests, FBI investigator Janice Vidarsik explained the severity of the charges.
In essence, they arrested people and searched premises on false pretenses and filed false police reports to support their illegal actions. They used excessive and unnecessary force, including Sergeant Miller striking a compliant and handcuffed arrestee.
Police Chief Leonard Gallo resigned January 30th, this after a 40-year career, which included 14 years as East Haven Chief. Mayor Joseph Maturo insisted that Gallo had not resigned under pressure, but was simply ready to retire. Maturo has defended the arrested officers and the chief, whom he appointed. After the arrests, he was asked what he would do to improve relations. He responded that maybe he'd have tacos for dinner that night, setting off another firestorm of criticism. He later apologized. Among East Haveners, it's not hard to find those who side with the mayor and police chief. Tom, who declined to give his last name, has lived in town for 25 years. He says the four officers should not have been arrested.
I believe this whole Main Street area is getting more and more crime-ridden as years go by, but the police officers are afraid to arrest anybody because it's going to be called profiling.
Advocates for Latino and Black communities in Greater New Haven applauded the arrests and resignation, but many are wary that these changes don't go far enough. Latrina Kelly expressed her hope for change despite longstanding frictions between the police department and communities of color. She is the interim director at Junta for Progressive Action. That's a New Haven-based Latino advocacy organization. Kelly spoke after Chief Gallo's retirement was announced.
I think it's a good first step, but I think that if the mayor doesn't really start opening dialogue with the Latino community and the entire East Haven community about racial tensions, that this is just a Band-Aid on a larger problem.
Some Latino leaders at the state level have called for Mayor Maturo to step down, but New Haven and East Haven Latinos are focusing on other issues. Dixon Jimenez, an Ecuadorian community activist, says he wants Latinos to be involved in the search for a new chief.
We don't want anyone who's going to knock down doors, put people in handcuffs. Rather, we want someone to offer their hand, talk with the community, see what our problems are, and try to fix them. Because I also understand that sometimes members of our community have behaved badly, but that doesn't justify the treatment we receive.
Pedro Gutierrez runs a bakery on Main Street. He says it's a good location from which to sell the empanadas his customers love, but that his business suffered greatly due to police harassment.
Siempre estaban estacionados cerca de los negocios y deteniendo a nuestros clientes.
They always stationed themselves near our businesses and stopped Latino customers. And I realized that the police were not giving us security and just wanted to chase away my customers.
Sino que estaba más bien tratando de ahuyentar a mis clientes.
Asked if he wants the mayor to resign, Gutierrez says it's premature to think about that.
Pero yo creo que con toda la cobertura que ha dado la prensa,
I think with all the media coverage and the Justice Department investigation, the authorities are going to think a lot more about reconciliation and want to work with the Latino community because we're a part of this town.
También para la comunidad latina porque somos parte de este pueblo.
On February 1st, a new regional interfaith interracial coalition of clergy announced a 3-point plan to reform the East Haven Police Department. It includes judicial reviews of convictions resulting from arrests by the indicted officers. I'm Melinda Tuhus in East Haven, Connecticut.
For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word. We're back in 30 seconds. That's 30 segundos. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Three artists join us in a conversation today about using humor and satire to challenge our notions about language and identity and race-based comedy.
Well-preserved Caucasian. Starting bid, 20,000.
Yo, what's going on, mi gente? What's good? What's really good? It's me, Chuleta, and it's, once again, it's Es Chuleta time when we discuss topics about, you know, contemporary art.
Oops, it's time for the Ocho Hour of Our Home.
Comics, performance artists, cultural critics, all using comedy in provocative ways to talk about issues. Issues that can make us laugh, but can also make us squirm in our seats. We begin with a South Asian-Canadian comic who's now living and working in the United States.
Jersey, make some noise for Russell Peters!
We caught up with Peters at his show in Newark, New Jersey, where he played to an enthusiastic and very diverse crowd of fans.
Hello, white folks. How are you? I'm glad you're here. I miss you guys. It's true, you know, when you're walking around, you don't see white people anymore. I don't know if we're in like the big Caucasian drought of 2011.
Russell Peters may not have been born here, but he's an astute observer of how we, as Americans, interact with each other. Peters grew up in a working-class suburb just outside of Toronto. He was born to Indian parents and says his experience growing up as the child of immigrants is what informs his comedy.
The immigrant experience isn't exclusive to non-white people. Everybody has an immigrant experience, whether they're from Ireland or from India or Jamaica or Africa or wherever you may be from. And the accent is different, but the experience is the same. And since a good portion of the world is, you know, migrating all over the place, a lot more people than you think can relate to it.
Just for the record, my Arab friends, I don't do any Arab jokes in my act. It's not that I don't think you're funny. I just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to die. Like, I'll do a joke about an Arab, and you guys will be like, ah, ha, 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 and you look at the Arab guy, and be like, ha, 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 ha.
When you're an outsider, you see everything. First of all, you're from Canada, so you're an outsider, so you've watched America your whole life. Then you're a brown guy in Canada, so you're an outsider, so you step back and you watch the rest of Canada. All my life I've been an outsider, so I've always been able to look at everything. I mean, you know, when you're in the center of something, you don't really see everything around you.
Peter says he doesn't understand why so many people in the United States are concerned about fitting into this box of being politically correct.
Latin people in the house, where are you, Latinos? All right. That's what I like about the East Coast. All the Latinos are generally legal, so that's nice.
I don't know what people's fear is talking about race. It's actually more fearful for me when people are afraid to talk about race, because that means you're not recognizing what makes us individuals, you know?
Peter's comedy went viral back in 2006 after clips from a Canadian comedy special he did exploded on the internet. Some of these clips have over 12 million hits on YouTube, and Peter says his fan base crosses national boundaries and race. Here's a clip from a performance on Lopez Tonight.
I mean, my wife's pregnant now. I knocked her up, and let's be honest, that wasn't hard to do. She's Latina and I'm Indian, the two most fertile people on the planet. You know? We actually didn't even have sex. I just sent her a text one day. And, babe, save some for me. I'm coming home. I got home. Thump.
I think I'm talking to people that don't feel like they're being spoken to, and they kind of feel like I'm their voice. See, the whole objective behind my comedy is not so much alienate, but it's kind of more of a get in on the joke with me, would you? I think I get away with it more because I'm somewhat ambiguous to them, you know? They're not really sure where I fit in on this color chart. The way the world sees it is black and white. And brown fits right in the middle, which means I can kind of like pick on both sides and go, you're both messed up. Here's your answer.
You ever hear somebody speaking Portuguese? Doesn't it sound like Spanish being spoken by a deaf person? Portuguese just sounds like really badly pronounced Spanish, doesn't it? Here's a Spanish guy counting to three. Unos, dos, tres. Here's a Portuguese guy. Unos, dos, tres.
I think you should be nervous about hurting somebody's feelings if there's some sort of intent to hurt their feelings. When you have no intention of hurting somebody's feelings, you don't have to worry about hurting somebody's feelings.
But there are certain boundaries that Peters rarely crosses, like when it's okay for him to use the N-word. Only in front of a black audience, Peter says, as he did when he performed on Def Comedy Jam.
If you're going to say something about people, make sure the people are there. Otherwise, you're talking behind people's back. You know, there's always that debate from white people, why can't we say it? And because your intention to say it is always wrong. There's no time in your life where you should be like, I really need to say this word right now.
You know what the funny thing to me about the N-word is that white people are trying to stop black people from using the N-word. Now, as a guy who grew up with black people, I know that the N-word is not specific to people. It is used for everything else but people. It's not specific to black people. I see my friends, I'm like, yo, Russell, I seen you with some Chinese niggas last night. You seen me with some Chinese what?
You know, everything in life is all about intentions, right? My intentions are good, and if I take the time to learn about you, I think that shows that I've taken the time to learn about you. And when I talk about you, I talk about you from a real place. And it's never my intention to hurt your feelings or make you feel bad about anything. It's more to let you know that other people know about you and that we're all in on this joke and we should all laugh together.
Chinese people, sale or no sale, you're going into Louis Vuitton every day. You never buy but you'll go in every day. Sales guy, can I help you, sir? No, just looking. Minute sales guy turns his back, Chinese guy whips out a camera.
Russell Peters and his wife just had a baby girl, born in Los Angeles as an American citizen, to an Indian-Canadian father and an Ecuadorian-American mother. Check out LatinoUSA.org for more on his comedy. Like Russell Peters, Lalo Alcaraz is an iconoclast. From the debates over Proposition 187 in California in the 1990s to denouncing SB 1070 in Arizona, Lalo Alcaraz creates art as protest, not for a museum, but for the front lines. He's a radio host of KPFK's The Pocho, Hour of Power, and he's the artist behind La Cucaracha, the only Latino political syndicated daily comic strip in the United States. And he joins us now from Los Angeles. ¿Qué onda, Lalo?
Wow, I sound pretty good there. I agree with all of that.
So let me ask you, you are a satirist. That's what you do. You poke fun at yourself, at others. So what role do you think satire does or should play in our society, a time when emotions are so fraught on this issue of our divided country?
The way I like to use satire two ways. You know, one is to cheer our side up, you know. I think that Latinos, especially Mexicans, cope with the world by just laughing at it. And I think that's something I picked up from my parents. You know, if you're in a tragic circumstance, and it might be inappropriate, but really I don't think it's ever inappropriate to try to cheer yourself up by laughing. And then secondly, to kind of cut through all the propaganda that, you know, to stand up for your own rights is un-American. So, I mean, to me, it's a knife, a scalpel sometimes, but I like it as an axe.
One of your cartoons is actually a mock-up of a photograph of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. There's another one of Lou Dobbs, and both of them, what you've done is you've given them pig's ears and a pig nose. And it's like, Lou Dobbs, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, you are pigs.
I did get letters from some law enforcement people about that Joe Arpaio one I did. I mean, believe me, I didn't do it without knowing the history of, you know, calling police pigs. You know, I didn't do it lightly because I'm just so offended by this man. And these, you know, law enforcement people, I would write them back and go, you know, I support law enforcement. I got friends in law enforcement. But I said, you know, if anybody's making law enforcement look bad, it's Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And that's the message, you know, behind anything like that. If I really stick a dagger into an issue, man, I make sure at least I can defend it and explain it to people and not just do it just for a laugh, you know.
So what about playing with stereotypes and embracing them? And, you know, I mean, there's a conversation now about the term, let's say, illegal, right? A lot of people think that that's an incredibly offensive term. Meanwhile, there are some who are here without papers who actually call themselves ilegales.
Yeah.
So at what point do we assume these terms, these images, these stereotypes, or rechazarlos, turn them away?
There's one thing is which I disagree with is banning words. You know, I don't think we should ban any words because I have to use them as a writer. You know, I have to use the word illegal. And I use it, you know, if I have a character saying it in a disparaging way, then that's what I meant to do. And, you know, I felt the same way about the word wetback, you know, that I generally don't support, you know, anybody saying it. But, you know, in Spanish, if you say mojado, it just has a different connotation. You know, I think it's okay if you're saying it in a self-deprecating way or as a term of endearment. I mean, there's just nuance to language.
Can Anglos, can other people of color make fun of Latinos? And can we make fun of other groups as well?
To me, this is a reason, like, I never find that conservative comedians are funny because they're stomping on the little guy. You know, they're making fun of poor people, and they're not doing it to uplift or to, you know, as they say, afflict the comfortable or comfort the afflicted. They're doing it to deprive people of their rights. I mean, I've seen a Korean stand-up comic doing Mexican jokes, and he was hilarious because it was all about him trying to fit into his new Mexican family and the kind of a cultural clash of that. And like Russell Peters says, you know, when I say the N-word or when black artists say the N-word, it's, you know, they're not really using it, you know, to offend a black person. I think, you know, banning the N-word is ridiculous. I did a comic strip about, you know, taking the N-word out of the Huckleberry Finn, and, you know, they replaced it with the word slave, you know, and at the end my character says, slave, please, you know. The meaning behind it is what, you know, should be changed, not the word itself.
Lalo, thanks so much for joining us again on Latino USA. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun.
You got it.
Lalo Alcaraz is a cartoonist and host of the Pocho Hour of Power on KPFK in Los Angeles. We've got to take a short break, but we'll be back in a minute, so stay with us. No se vayan. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Yo, what's going on? What's good, mi gente? It's me, Chuleta. Welcome to Chuleta's Being Latino Art 411. Okay, here we're going to talk about contemporary art, okay?
That's La Chuleta. She's in your face, opinionated, and from the streets of the Bronx. In some ways, a stereotype of a homegirl from the ghetto, but she's actually the brainchild of Wanda Raimundi Ortiz, who's a performance artist and professor who lives in Orlando, Florida. Raimundi Ortiz says her mission is to bring what she calls the white box of the museum world into El Barrio. Her alter ego helps to bridge multiple cultures and make the high art world accessible to the poor, while also using humor as the means to open up a dialogue about identity and stereotypes. And Wanda Raimundi Ortiz joins us now from the studios of WUCF in Orlando, Florida. Welcome to Latino USA, Wanda.
Thank you.
So you created this character called La Chuleta, who is, she's like seriously in your face.
Yeah. I think you need a little bit of backstory. Before I started doing these video performances, I was making work based on a Puerto Rican superhero called Huepa Woman. She was basically this sort of politicized Boricua who still kind of had the look and the markings of, like, you know, femme fatale, small waist, you know, ample bosom, ample whole body kind of situation, but was also very politically aware of.
And we should also probably say what Huepa means.
Huepa,
because if you're calling her Huepa Woman, so yes. What does Huepa mean?
Well, as far as I can, you know, speak from my personal experience, Huepa was kind of this colloquialism for, like, woo, like you have a party, like, Huepa, si eres boricua de verdad, digan Huepa, that kind of thing. Huepa Woman was a play on Wonder Woman, Wanda Woman, which is what I grew up with, you know, people teasing me with all the time as a kid. I was you know, this kind of art school dork girl living in the Bronx, hanging out with a bunch of, you know, comic book guy friends of mine. And I was, when I was very young, I wanted to make this cartoon character, and I was just starting to become politicized. And in order to have a superhero, you need a villain. And then that's when my first variation of Chuleta came to be, where Chuleta was like this super...
Oh, I get it. So Chuleta was like the villain to Huepa Woman. Oh.
And there's a very specific reason why I chose the name Chuleta, because my mother used to always say that a person who was very difficult to deal with was carne puerco, you know, like hard to chew and digest and not really good for you and kind of greasy. So Chuleta was the obvious moniker for me in my mind as a critique.
All being pork and Chuleta being pork chop.
Pork and pork chop and greasy and fried and, you know, sort of trying to make a concise statement about who this person was and in my world. And then, you know, when I was younger and I was just starting to become politicized, I just started understanding, you know, what the difference between Puerto Rico, you know, juxtaposed against the United States, and understanding the differences between New Yorican and Puerto Rican statehood, independence, and even the angst that I felt. I was raised very much being a Puerto Rican girl, Puerto Rican woman, just happened to be living in New York. So the notion of New Yorican was almost like an insult to me. So in the very, very early stages, you have Huepa Woman who's out there trying to promote a more responsible notion of what this Puerto Rican woman is. And then you've got Chuleta who doesn't give a about what anybody says. She's
and actually because I think in a way to talk about Chuleta, why, when instead we can just have you become her. So why do you think it's important for people who live in the barrio to go to museums, these very important big historical institutions? Why should people from El Barrio be going to the museums?
Okay, so all right, how you doing? What's going on? What's good? You know, why I gotta go downtown if there's a museum right in my neighborhood and it's gonna be showing people, like, whatever stuff that I see that it looks like me, then why shouldn't I go? And people need to be going to these places so that, you know, what? Like, man, whatever. There's more. It's gonna be more of us than them anyway. So whatever, just go to a museum. That's it. Just go. Just do your thing. That's it. I don't gotta say nothing else because you should be doing that. And that's it.
All right, Wanda.
Yeah. It can keep going and going and going.
So, Wanda.
Yes.
So, So when you have some of the, so you've taken this character, La Chuleta, and you've actually put her on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you have, it's interesting, I was looking at some of the responses, and some people said, I can't believe that I'm being talked down to in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And other people said, oh my God, this was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, what, when you're thinking about that kind of satire that is based on a kind of stereotype, a hyper stereotype,
mm-hmm.
what's your response to that criticism?
In my education and my training, I was told the best kind of farce or satire is the one that's so blurry that you can't really tell what's going on. I mean, I'm a trickster at heart. I have a playful spirit, but I ponder very deeply about these things. And when I see some of the negative responses to the work, I can understand why they would get that if the person has no entree into my personal work, or maybe doesn't necessarily have a discourse already, like, in their own mind about stereotypes and criticism. And, you know, the sharpest critics are the ones that are the most convincing. And when I say that, I think about David Chappelle and those folks that really go right to the razor, right to the very, very edge of what's acceptable. And I feel like even if, you know, if someone feels that they've been talked down to, that they've been offended, but they've been made aware of something that does in fact exist, you know.
In your work, you like to be very upfront and talk about things like, you know, identity politics. And it's almost as if you feel, well, this isn't the character of La Chuleta, but I think in all of your work, do you feel like you are someone whose life's work is dedicated to making sure that people understand each other, that we understand that we can move in each other's spaces? What would it be?
I feel like I poise myself in the fracture between the opposing forces. And so, where, you know, maybe urban folks that would not have necessarily gone to an art gallery show would then come to see my work and find themselves in an environment where they're on the mission statement of a museum, for example, it's open to the public, open for all, but there's this kind of blanket, you know, hushed, unspoken understanding that maybe certain folks, if you're not equipped with this particular education or vocabulary, then maybe you're gonna get lost in here, and no one's really working to demystify that for the general public. I do see myself as kind of like this sort of artist slash translator slash go between the cultures, and it's really important for me that folks ultimately get to understand each other, because I think that that's the root of a lot of problems. So if I can help out in any way, you know, that's what I do.
Wanda Raimundi Ortiz is a multimedia artist and a professor at the University of Central Florida in Orlando, Florida. For more, check out our website at latinousa.org. And that's it for this week's Latino USA. Our program is produced by Mincho Jacob, Tina Rubio, and Carolina Gonzalez. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Funding for Latino USA is provided in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, supporting families leading change.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Pew Charitable Trust, working with states to reform the voting process for military and overseas citizens at pewtrust.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR.